see there. I can't hear you. You're muted. Can you unmute?
Yes.
Yeah.
You read, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you, Adele. And so, without any further ado, I would like to go to England. Penny, Claire, are you there?
Hello, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Super, we've got a new...
Say something?
Hopefully that's not going to cut out on us, but it's supposed to help us speak a bit better with when we're one-on-one.
Okay. All right. So Penny and Claire are going to share their experience, strength, and hope. And I'm eager to hear. And by the way, let's give Claire a hand, because she edited all these clips together, and I've got more. Yeah, that one. And we baptized her Stephanie Spielberg, because we both went into an obsession. And I started off with 5 clips, I think, and then the next day she had 20, and she called me and says, how much more are you gonna do, and for how long? And we just laughed. Take it away, you guys.
Thanks so much, Yvonne, and it was my pleasure. Thank you for asking me to do it. It's really fun. The video and the clips and everything, there isn't much more to say about love. I mean, I'm going to have to fill 15 minutes, and then you're going to have to fill 15 minutes, so we'll find something to talk about. But it was really interesting watching everyone and everyone's different take and the common themes that were running through everything. I was kind of thinking about what love wasn't for me before Al-Anon, or more precisely, what I considered love to be that I've learned was inaccurate. So love was conditioned, love was shifting and uncertainty. Love was, it was temporary, and it wasn't, it was an extension of loyalty. It wasn't something that was just there because it was there. There was always a reason behind it, and I was always very scared and skeptical of that. So a bit my story is, I come from a loving home. I know that I wasn't deprived of love as a child. I was quite confused as to how love was displayed, and that wasn't because it was taken away from me or not freely given, but I didn't understand the differences between what types of love there were. As a child, I had older siblings, my half siblings, and how my parents treated me was different from how they treated my siblings, and that was difficult to understand as a really young child. And then growing up through my teenage years, I was bullied at school, so friendship love, that type of love was quite, the boundaries didn't sit right then, and I didn't know what the rules were. And then coming to terms with my sexuality, that was a whole bunch of love that I had to keep quiet about and suppressed because of bullying that would have ensued had I been out at school. And basically my whole reference for what love was and what it should be was based around television. It was based around seeing friends and family interact, and my friends and family interact, and that always wasn't always the same for me. I felt like on the outside a lot of that time. I felt like I didn't have the sort of love that other people looked like they were having. I had a very warped sense of what that meant. And so I think that naturally led me into latching on to love when it was given, and that would do. And it led to really low self-esteem and self-worth, and so anything that I felt that looked like the movies or the TV or something, that if I had that little bit, it didn't matter about the other stuff. It didn't matter that I wasn't necessarily being treated right or that I was putting up with behavior that other people would say, you know, see you later, because it wasn't, I was getting something and that was good enough. And then I suppose, yeah, my first run-ins with alcoholism was in my probably early 20s, and I'd just not long come out, and it was one of my first relationships with a woman, and that was kind of exciting but also confusing again, because I didn't know what the norms of this type of relationship was based on the hetero world, and that was all very confusing in itself. And my partner at the time was struggling with her demons around the drink, and so it was very partitioned, like some days were fine and some days were not so much. They eventually sought out AA, and our relationship had ended in a natural kind of way, and that was fine, and moved on. And then later we were chatting, we remained quite good friends, and that was weird, because most of my hetero friends wouldn't remain friends with their exes, and it was quite normal and familiar for me within my circle of my gay friends that we would remain friends and chat, and so again there was that kind of, oh, this is a bit different, what are the rules, what are the boundaries, and it was all very, very odd. But anyway, we remained friends, and she said to me one day after she'd been to AA for a while that she was going to start dating men, because her sponsor had told her that the reason that she was drinking was because she was a lesbian, and it was God's way of punishing her. So if she was going to be straight, then, you know, that would take away some of her drinking problems. And I was dumbfounded and just completely shocked and appalled that an organization that I knew AA to be helpful would give out all this message, and that was it. I was like, nope, AA, I'm never gonna trust anything they say. And I was really, really quite shocked. And now know that that was just one individual's opinion, and how dangerous an opinion can be, and how important our traditions and our concepts are to keep the truth about recovery in everyone's life, and not diverted. So I know better. Anyway, fast forward into another relationship that was codependent and full of problems and mental health problems and history and stuff. And I found I'm a natural fixer, and I want to fix. I want to help. We were talking about that earlier, weren't we? And that was my way of showing love. If I could help you, I was loving you. That was the only thing I knew for sure. And I got really confused as to whether or not that display of love was about being in love with somebody, or whether that was just showing care and compassion. And that relationship went on for far too long, because I wasn't in love with that person any longer. I was just caring for them in several senses of the word, as in being a caring person, but also being the person that took care of them and looked after them and did things for them that they could have done for themselves, but I took it upon myself to do it for them. And I made a decision to leave that relationship and find someone very different, very, you know, complete opposite. And that would solve my problems, and I would be loved, and it would be fine. Oh, I've kind of skipped a main bit, actually. When I was 19, I was in a relationship with a guy. I was trying to do all this kind of normal stuff, and I don't know how I forgot that I had a son, but anyway, I fell pregnant at 19, and I have a lovely child. and that's a whole different type of love. That's a whole different entity that's brought into my life, and he's upstairs, and I love him dearly, but he knows that it was difficult, that at times I had postnatal depression, and I struggled with knowing I should love my son, but I couldn't at that time, but I did. It's just emotions and feelings, and I couldn't trust them. I couldn't trust what was real. But now he's my world, and I love him more than anything. So yeah, a little by story. Anyway, so go back to this kind of, yes, this new different person. And unsurprisingly, I'd found another alcoholic. And everything was fine at the beginning. But then quite quickly, things unraveled. And the love in that relationship shifted so rapidly. It was constantly, daily changing between loving and caring on both sides to bitterness and argument. And then as the disease developed, everything that goes with it, just deception, lying, cheating, stealing. And my behavior deteriorated along with that. And I was doing the best I could, I know that, but my son was impacted by that relationship, and I'd struggled along. After I left that relationship, I struggled with that feelings of guilt about what I'd put him through. But I know now that I was doing the best I could, and I was loving my way through it. It just wasn't really healthy. And so it was. I fell into Al-Anon coming up to 9 years ago. My partner at the time was quite poorly, jaundice, problems with liver, and we knew something needed to be done. So I dutifully took them off to AA, sat in the AA room with them, and was absolutely relieved when they spent the whole entire AA meeting in tears. And the reason I mentioned that was because my first experience of AA was, I'm never going to recommend anyone go to AA because of this horrendous experience that was I heard about this sponsor telling this other person, and this is all because you're somehow wrong. And hearing all this God stuff in the room, I was like, oh my goodness, what am I doing? But I was that desperate and that worried about this person that I loved, that I was prepared to hand them over to the jaws of AA just because I knew that I just needed them to drink, stop drinking. And I was prepared to go to any lengths, and that included potentially jeopardizing my relationship and screwing up the head of someone else because I thought that they might be turned again. And thank God that's not true, and that's not what happened. And I learned so much from those open AA meetings, and there was so much warmth and love in those rooms. And I learned to leave my alcoholic in those places and let them look after themselves. I kept going to open AA meetings for a while because before I got to Al-Anon, I thought, well, if I learn the stuff and if they're not really paying attention, then I can just top up their AA when they get home. And that's just, it was just my arrogance and ignorance at the time. But it wasn't long after that I found Al-Anon, and it took me several years worth of going to meetings and listening to start working on myself. I played a good story, and I told you what I thought you wanted to hear in terms of how my recovery was progressing. But actually, it took me a while to realize that I actually needed to do some work. And as soon as I did, I grew, my self-esteem grew, and I recognized the unacceptable behavior that I was tolerating was no longer in the bounds of what I thought was acceptable, and that I would make changes. And part of those changes was to leave that relationship, because it wasn't about whether or not the alcoholic was drinking or not, or whether or not I was going to put up with drinking at home or not. It was nothing to do with that. I recognized that the foundation of that relationship was based on quicksand, and there was nothing true about it. It was all fantasy, really. I still care for that person, but it's not the same. There was no substance to it. So I moved on from that relationship, and spent a little bit of time to myself, probably not enough, but a little bit. And that was enough for me to find this beautiful person I'm sat next to. And when we met online, and that was an interesting experience. And the first time I'd come back from an Al-Anon meeting, and I'm quite open about my attendance. And I happened to mention to Penny that we were asking what we'd done in the evening, and I said, I'd been to an Al-Anon meeting. I said, you probably don't know what that is, but, you know, blah, 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 blah. And your jaw nearly hit the floor, didn't it? and it was weird because as soon as we established that we both had program, it was such a relief to know that the person I was with understood how important my program is to me, and how more than anything that has to be the first and foremost part of my day, or my thoughts and my feelings, and then me, and then Penny. And it has to be in that order, because otherwise, yes, it does. Because otherwise I'm putting her before me, and then that twists my relationship. It twists my trust. It twists so many different things. And we constantly talk, don't we, about how important our relationship is, and how strong we are for both having a foundation in recovery, understanding the importance of reaching out to our sponsors, or talking to other people, talking to fellowship people who don't care about backstory, don't care about what the norm is. Their best interest is for me and for you. And we've used the program and the steps, and particularly step 4 and 5 and 11 and 10 and 11 and, well, all of them, but particularly inventory, to deal with a few problems that we've had. I mean, not that we've had many, because we're quite lucky, but when there has been issues, we've worked the steps on them, and it has saved us. It really has. It's really got us through some tight corners. And I'm so, so grateful that Penny understands how important my program is, and I understand how important her program is, and that we don't try not to interfere with that. So that's, and for me, that's love beyond my wildest dreams. That's security, and it's acceptance, and it's compassion and care in the healthiest form I've ever known. And I'm so grateful. I love the program so much. I love AA so much. And I love who I've become as a result of all the hard work I've put in to try and learn about my preconceptions about all sorts of things, but particularly what love is. So I'll leave it there and hand it over to you.
Lovely. Thanks, Claire. My name's Penny. I'm alcoholic. It was fascinating, actually, listening to you, because the things that you said about your childhood and the things that you thought, that you fantasized, and the way you felt about how you felt about love, you know, the way you, like, I always used to fantasize, and I still do, things will be, one of my biggest things is fantasy, you know, like I fantasize, oh, we'll all live happily ever after, you know, and I always used to think that as well. And my only reference about love was films. And I used to look at my friends, just like you were saying about the love. What was really interesting was my way of dealing with that was through alcohol. And when you first told me about doing the share, my initial reaction was, I said yes. And I said, 10 and a half years ago, if someone would have asked me to do a share on love, I would have knocked them out. Like, because I would have been so scared, like, but I know that fear is masked by anger, you know, and because I didn't understand what love was, you know, and I was just so scared of it, but like I wouldn't understood it. I just wouldn't have got it. And I just would have reacted, because when I come into the fellowship, I had so many barriers up, and I had this really polite sign that said, please go away. You know, like my mate used to say to me, you look like one very scary lady. When I first came in the fellowship, I used to have a baseball cap on me, scraped back. I was just full of anger. And what I was petrified, but I wouldn't let anyone in, and I wouldn't let anyone know. But everyone obviously could see it. Because my experience of love, unfortunately, was shown through sex. So that's how I associated love. And that's how I showed love, you know. So I didn't really have anything to go by. So the things I loved and the things I did, like I loved training and whatever I did to take them, feel like my home life was carnage, it was a nightmare. And what I did to take them things away was I drank, and I loved what it did to me. You know, I loved anything to change the way I felt, because what was going on at home was a nightmare. And so I drank and I took drugs and I loved it. And that was my next love, you know. And I drank to get drunk. And I smashed the hell out of it. And I know whatever I do it to extreme. So whether that is work, whether that is exercise, whether that is eating, whether like eating too much, eating too little, whatever that is, you know, drinking, drugs, whatever, I will do it to the extreme. And unfortunately, my drinking took me to some really bad places, you know. I would stand, I got to the point where what would happen, I didn't think my drinking was that bad, but I realised what I would do, I would just lower my expectations, you know, to justify my behaviour, to think to myself, well, do you know what, I'm not that bad. And it got to the point where in the end I thought I was a genius, I'd be wearing a skirt so I could stand at a bar and just wet myself at the bar. So I didn't have to go to the toilet, and nobody would notice that I'd be wetting myself at the bar. And I thought I was a genius for doing that, thinking that. And I now know that no normal drinker does that. Like, I don't go to a bar with Claire and she stands there and wets herself at the bar, you know, like, surprisingly enough. It got to the point, though, that I felt so bad with inside myself that I did many suicide attempts. And eventually found my way to the fellowship, you know. And I was at the point of breaking, but still, it took me 2 years to put the drink down. But the only thing I did well was I kept coming back to the fellowship, and I squealed myself up every time I relapsed. What I realise now, what the fellowship has given me, you know, all I wanted to do in the end was just stop drinking. I didn't realise when I came in, people would say to me, if you don't stop drinking, you'll lose your family, you'll lose your home, you'll lose your job, you'll lose this, you'll lose. And I'd be like, I'm still really young, I'm 25, ain't that bad. Within them 2 years, I lost my family, I lost my home, I lost my job. You know, by the end of my drinking, I had two black sacks in my car. I wasn't homeless. I was living in my car. So that was my thing. I wasn't homeless. I was living in my car. So technically, I wasn't homeless. That's where my drinking took me. So they were all yets that came true. Eventually, I put the drink down. And all I wanted to do was stop drinking. And what I realized today, that this fellowship has given me so, so much more than putting the drink down. You know, one day at a time, I don't drink. And what it's enabled me to do is to feel again. And by feeling again, I can make myself, that V word, I hate that V word, vulnerable, you know. I can open myself up, I can trust again. And by trusting, because I didn't trust no one, I was so untrustworthy as well, you know, I'd nick your wallet and then help you look for it. But also I can trust others. And by trusting others, then all them defences, all them barriers start to come down, and I can open myself up to love, and then I can be loved as well, you know, and I can gain that self-respect back, and I can gain that self-confidence, because when I come into fellowship, my self-respect, my self-confidence, my self-esteem was on the floor, you know, I was lower than low. But slowly, the people in the fellowship have built me back up, and they have loved me like nobody has ever loved me, you know. And like, since even meeting Claire, like, she's introduced me, I've sat in Alolon meetings, and that's just increased my recovery tenfold as well. You know, listening to the complete different side of the fellowship. Like, when she said she was in Al-Anon, I thought, oh my God, Al-Anon's ate us. Like, here we go. I thought everyone from Al-Anon hated people from AA because we'd ruined your lives. But that was my perception, you know. This fellowship has given me so much more than I could ever give back. You know, love for me is a feeling inside that I feel, and I feel like I just want to give it away. And surely that must be AA, you know, and the 12 steps and the fellowship. Because without that, I've got nothing. And it's a bit like Claire said, we use this program day in, day out in our lives. It's a language we've developed, because we use it in our meetings, and we use it in our everyday talk, you know. And I think our relationship is built on honesty and trust, and that's our bedrock. We don't shy away from difficult conversations. None of my relationships have ever been like that. And all of that for just not taking one drink at a day. That's powerful, that's magic. I think I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Let's unmute ourselves and give them a hand. Let's say thank you. Penny,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.